welcome to Worlds Apart. Ever since the invention of cinematography, celebrity power has been a useful tool for winning not just high box office, but also the viewers' hearts and minds on issues far beyond the movie's theme. Should stars involve themselves in politics, and how does one tell genuine citizen engagement from a mass influence operation? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Indian actor and film producer John Abraham. John, it's amazing to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Pleasure talking to you, Oksana.
Now, for our viewers from other parts of the world, you are a huge star in India. You were the highest paid model there. You worked internationally. You starred in and produced hit movies. But lately, you've also been pretty open with your political and geopolitical views. Before we even discuss what they are, let me ask you, why would a person who tasted domestic and international acclaim risk it by involving himself in public discussions of politics? Does it pay well?
Well, I'll give you an honest answer, Oksana. To start with, actually, it all happened by default and not by design. I had a film that released last month called The Diplomat. And I've always been very cued into, into what's happening in the geopolitical space in the world. So I decided that, if I do this film, I'm not going to go down the mandatory route of just talking to people about my film and about, you know, everything that's happening in the film, but talk to people about what's happening geopolitically in the world, because those were the questions that were posed to me. And well, I answered them, and there was another side of me that came out to the audience in India saying, hey man, this guy seems to be geopolitically pretty inclined. At the end of the day, Oksana, I'm an actor. I'm not a politician. I'm not a bureaucrat. But I do have certain political views, which I voiced on that program.
Absolutely. And I also heard in another interview that you watch the news for an hour every morning. Given the content these days, I wonder how does it not make you sick and how it allows you to keep your spirits up for the rest of the day?
Yeah, it is very depressing. It is, I mean, no one can take away from the fact that it is very depressing, but it's very important to know what's happening in the world, what's happening in your country, and what's happening all around, because we do get affected by everything that's happening in the world. So I keep myself informed.
Mm-hmm. Of course. And you mentioned my country. It's your comments on the conflict in Ukraine that drew so much attention to you, at least in this part of the world. And in those comments, it was clear that you understand not only what's happening, but also, I think, the larger geopolitical context, including NATO's expansion as one of the factors underlying it. How did it happen to be on your personal radar? Because you are very far away from, Western Europe.
Yeah, I mean, see, growing up, I've been in a strange way, my mind, my left brain and my right brain is a convoluted capitalist communist brain. So I'm probably socialist in a lot more ways than one. And I've been a big fan of Marxist philosophy over a period of time. And my father comes from that part of India, which had a very communist bent. Mm-hmm. It comes from a state of Kerala. Mm-hmm. And, I obviously from the time 1991, 1990, when you talk about Gorbachev, when you talk about, he was a hero to a lot of us. Mm-hmm. And we really admired him. And then February 9th, where someone like James Baker said, listen, we won't, it was the unification of Germany at that point of time, and James Baker said, we won't move one inch to the east. Yeah. And things started changing from there on, and, to cut the long story short, you had Vladimir Putin saying that, hey, listen, we're screaming from the rooftops, we're telling you, you're moving, and no one was listening. Mm-hmm. And, because I happened to come on a news program and people asked me, what are your views on that? And I said, man, Russia stood by India through thick and thin. I am that Indian who's seen Russia hold my hand. Mm-hmm. And it's time to speak up for, you know, the world's against you and no one's, you know, the optics are so different. It's very important to, like, see things the way they are.
Well, John, can I ask you about that? Because it's true that historically Russia and India have long enjoyed a fruitful and, I think, genuinely friendly relationship. But it was specifically India's tacit support of Russia over the last couple of years by refusing to join Western efforts to sanction and ostracize this country that allowed Russia to withstand the pressure and defend what it deems its core security interests. Do you think strategically, though, it was a good call for India? Because your country, too, carried a risk of being penalized, harshly penalized by the West.
I think it was the best decision that India took. I said this on a program, and you know, before, you know, post the war breaking out, I just kept saying, you know, I hope India needs to stand by Russia. India needs to stand by Russia and stand. And we did. And credit to our government, kudos to our government. And let me put this on record. I'm not pro or anti the Indian government. I don't have any political inclinations, but I think we took a damn good stand, and we've got a fantastic external affairs minister who goes out there and he speaks his mind on us buying Russian oil, on why we need to do what we need to do, because we need to protect our country as well. And we're doing exactly that. And we understand that Russia have been our partners through thick and thin, and we recognize that. So kudos to our government.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the issues that created this strife between Russia and the West ultimately comes down to identity. You know, this Moscow's insistence on its sovereignty, its refusal to fold into the Western-led order, especially as it was becoming increasingly more discriminatory, Russia's realization that we can solve many of our problems by ourselves. And I see this sentiment becoming popular in India as well, this sort of self-contentment, you know, seeing yourself for what you are and appreciating your country in a genuine, very realistic way, you know, seeing the many challenges, but also seeing many values that the history, that the civilization, the culture, the people have created. I wonder if that is one of the things that we share at this point of time, both Russia and India, and perhaps many other countries too.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to learn from this. And I think, you know, I had friends who went to St. Petersburg recently, and they told me it's such a beautiful country. It's so self-sufficient, so self-reliant. And that's exactly what India stands for. We stand for being self-reliant, self-sufficient. And yeah, I mean, I think, you know, let me put it this way, Oksana. No one wants war. You don't want to see Russian people die. You don't want to see Ukrainian people die. No one wants war. And I'm not endorsing warrior in any way. But I think in the situation that there is, I think Russia's held itself in good stead. So, you know, all credit to your government, your people for holding out and doing such a good job of it. And actually standing firm, I think that's important. Not getting into, not getting into the space where you're pushed into a corner. So standing firm is very important. And I find that very, very admirable.
Well, and hearing that from an action figure like yourself holds a particular value. Now, speaking about standing firm, I heard you say that you would love to meet with the Russian president personally. I wonder if there are any questions you would like to ask him.
Yeah, I think I would love to meet him. I think he's a very, very strong personality. And I just want to understand his mind, because there's so much of pressure right now from the world on this one man and on this one country. I just want to sit there and get into his mind, have a heart-to-heart conversation with him, mm-hmm. have a cup of tea with him, you know, and just talk to him and, you know, just... I really admire strength in people, and I admire a sense of self-conviction. And I think Mr. Putin is that person. So he's a real hero, and I'm sure Russians are very proud of what. And I'm sure there are divided opinions there as well. But I think he's a strong man. It's important to be strong.
Well, he's definitely a very interesting personality. And by the way, you may get that opportunity to meet him later this year, because it was just recently announced that he has accepted Prime Minister Modi's invitation to go on a visit to India later this year, which gives me a segue to ask about another personal interest of yours, which you already mentioned, that is diplomacy. You mentioned the movie Diplomat, which was released recently, and which narrates the real-life story of an Indian woman in Pakistan released from captivity with the help of Indian diplomats. First of all, what attracted you to this kind of plot?
A story, a beautiful story, a true story about a woman. It's not a story about two countries. It's a story about this woman and how she had to get back and find her freedom. And that's what really attracted me. What also attracted me was that diplomacy, more than war, was the best solution to all these problems. And that's what I hope for. And in the world, that's all we hope for. You know, somewhere, India stands for that. You know, we stand for diplomacy. We stand for calling people together. We would like to be mediators. And I think that's beautiful. And that's why I fell in love with this story.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that it's not a story about the two countries. And yet, I know that your Pakistani neighbors are very sensitive to being negatively stereotyped, especially in mass media. And let's admit that human trafficking is a serious global problem. And it's always, I think, a challenge to narrate, you know, a real-life story without making it into a cultural argument or counter-argument. Do you think this film is fair in this regard?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's one thing that I wanted to steer clear of. I wanted to steer clear of nationalism, jingoism, beating your chest, making another country look bad so your country looks good. And I think credit to my director, and I give myself also that credit, that we walked that thin line and we've shown that there are good and bad people everywhere in the world. And Pakistan has good people. And there's nothing wrong. I always say that if you belong to a country, you need to be proud of coming from that country. And we've shown people in Pakistan that are good as well. And that's the beauty of all this film. Mm-hmm. It's actually a film that I'm sure people from Pakistan would really enjoy. Mm-hmm.
By the way, would you like this movie to screen in Pakistan? And would you personally be prepared to go there and present it?
Well, I don't know about the film being screened there because, there are issues between the two countries that need to be sorted out. This could be a cultural exchange. I'd be happy if issues were sorted out. If you ask me, do I have a problem with Pakistan? Do I feel that war is the only solution? I always believe that diplomacy is the best solution. I always believe that sitting across and talking is the best solution. Mm-hmm. Of course, we all like for all our films to be screened everywhere because we believe that films are agnostic to politics. We believe that films should be screened everywhere in the world, and that's mm-hmm. how we look at films. Mm-hmm.
Now, given your fascination in diplomacy, the Indian diplomatic service is well-respected around the world. Your current Minister of External Affairs, S. Jaishankar, is a rock star in the world's diplomatic corps. And I know that you met him recently. I wonder if he has any opinion about, you know, Indian diplomacy taking to the big screen and hopefully smaller screens as well.
He's watching the film on the 19th of January. He's heard so much about it. So he's finally, someone's pulling him to see the film. So I'm really excited about his reaction to the film. And like I said, it's not a pro-government film. It's not an anti-government film. It's not a pro-India film. It's not an anti-Pakistan film.
Well, it's a pro-diplomacy film,
story.
As you said.
Correct. Oksana, correct. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay, well, John, we have to take a very short break at this point of time, but we'll be back in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Indian actor and film producer John Abraham. Now, John, I know that you are currently working on another geopolitical movie called Tehran, which touches on another very tense geopolitical relationship, that between Israel and Iran. What kind of audience do you think would be attracted to this kind of story?
It'll be a world audience because the film's called Tehran. It's a true story about an attempt on an Israeli diplomat's life in New Delhi. And how, when we did our forensics, we found out that, you know, we had to go to Tehran, and my character goes to Tehran. So for which I had to learn Farsi, I had to learn Hebrew. So I think it's a world film, and I'd love for even my friends and my brothers and sisters in Russia to watch this film, and I'd be really excited.
Well, I haven't had an opportunity to watch it yet, but I find it very refreshing that, you know, such stories are being narrated by non-Western teams, because we do have a domination of not only, you know, Western filmmakers, but also Western view of the world. And it's refreshing to see somebody from another part of the world to deal with those controversial issues. How do you think an Indian narration may be different from the Western one?
So, Oksana, I'll just give you a small brief about myself, and I'll tell you where it comes from. My grandfather from my mother's side came from Iran. So they landed on the shores of Bombay in the early 1930s. My great-grandfather from my father's side came from Syria. So I have seen the world in a very agnostic way. So my views are very neutral. They're not religious-based. They're not country-based. They're absolutely neutral views, which is why I have the capacity and the capability to see things through a very neutral sense. Just exactly like how you do your interviews with certain political heads. You keep a very neutral view when you do your, you don't get your biases in. I don't get any biases in my filmmaking.
Well, but I think it's important to stress at least about myself. And I also sense the same attitude in you, having watched many of your interviews. Neutral in this sense, meaning that you actually have been exposed to other points of views and you respect them. You are aware that people may see the world differently from yourself. So you are not annulling that point of view. You're just saying that, you know, there are many different realities in this world, religious, spiritual, geographical, geopolitical, and we all have to be mindful of that. That's neutrality. It's not ignorance.
Absolutely.
It's actually the inclusion.
You're correct. You're absolutely correct.
Now, let me ask you a personal question, because I was surprised to hear that from you in another interview where you said that despite all your stardom in India, you still have to persuade producers that it's worthwhile making movies about men who are not just attractive and who do not fight well on the screen, but who actually use their brains. And that's quite a comment as far as I'm concerned. I wonder if that's a Bollywood bias. Why do you think Indian producers would be hesitant to approach these kind of projects without singing and dancing?
Yeah, I mean, we like formula, and singing and dancing is a very cultural fabric of our society, and we enjoy it, we embrace it, and we love it, and people love it around us. But I believe it's time for change. The audience is evolving. You need to make different films. You can't follow formula all the time. And I am probably going through that bleeding period of telling my producers and my directors, hey, let's attempt this. This is a little different. This is a little different. Let's do this. Let's do this. There is some resistance, but I think we're seeing change amongst the younger Indian audience. They're completely accepting of anything that's new.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that part of your family comes from India's Zoroastrian Parsi community. I think your mom is from that side. And another big star hailing from there was Freddie Mercury, who was once asked about whether stars should be used their power to try to shape the world for the better. And his response was essentially that if you are John Lennon, then perhaps yes, but he didn't feel that he had the ability or power to do that. I wonder how you feel about it. Do you think celebrities should use their fame to try to influence politics or social affairs?
I think we are where we are, and we must make a difference. So I probably beg to differ from Freddie Mercury, even if he belongs to my community. And maybe if you don't have the ability to do it, that's different. But if you have the ability, you have the awareness, it's very important to speak up, because if you don't speak up, then who will?
Well, that's a tricky question, because I mean, and what you defined as awareness, I'm sure you would agree with me that celebrity power does come with a certain enchanting effect. And when people see their favorite singer or actor involved in some political cause, they're more likely to sympathize with it uncritically. And this could be used in all sorts of ways. For example, Charlie Chaplin campaigned vigorously to lessen tensions between the USSR and the United States. But we also have people like, let's say, Angelina Jolie, who seems to campaign for every war that the West wants to fight. So my question to you is personal. Do you have any rules, personal rules or limits there? Something that you would never, for example, support, or something that you would support till the end?
So the one thing, Oksana, that I would... So I'm not political in my views. What I would support is humanitarian things. Mm-hmm. And that's very, very important for me. So if I see suffering, for example, I would want to stand up for that. If I see that there's a war being waged, and if I see bias, and if I'm asked to speak about it, I would speak about it. And I see no harm in doing that. It's very important to do that. It's very important to, they say half knowledge is dangerous. So that's something that you need to be very aware of. So when you come in and you talk on a certain topic, you better be assured that you need to have full knowledge. Otherwise, you shouldn't be speaking.
Mm-hmm. Since we mentioned your family background, you said that your father comes from the state of Kerala, and he is, as far as I understand, a Syrian Christian. Your mother, as we mentioned, is of the Zoroastrian Parsi descent. And this is quite a mix, I guess, even for an Indian. And I know that you consider yourself to be a staunchly patriotic Indian. You like your country. What do you like the best about being a citizen of your country?
That we all exist beautifully in this country. I'm a minority, and such a small minority from both my sides. You can literally count the Zoroastrians on your fingers. But I think we all exist so beautifully in this country, and I'm probably a shining example of that. And I'm really proud of where my country is going. I'm a staunch believer in the future of my country. Every country has its pluses and minuses, but I would like to see the pros rather than the cons and focus on that.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned your fascination or interest in Marxism in early years, and I know that the state of Kerala, where your father is from, you know, the communist, the socialist ideas are still pretty popular there. In a sense of people supporting, let's say, public education or, you know, good public health service, other public services. Why do you think these ideas are so persistent there? And do you think India going forward would share or implement some of them, not in an ideological, but I guess in a social, in a livable way?
I put it this way. I think the world is so capitalist right now, and everything is so capitalist driven that you know, the state that I come from is kind of it's I wouldn't say we are stuck in limbo, but we are battling with our Kerala is battling with its socialist ideas. So we're trying to we're trying to marry the two together, but it's a very unique state in itself. It's a beautiful state where you see a church, a temple, and a mosque within 100 meters of each other, and all coexisting so beautifully. And it's very communist in its thought. And I want to tell you this, Oksana, when Fidel Castro passed away, that state went into mourning for 3 days. Mm. It just, I think, shut down.
Interesting. I think Russia is dealing with pretty similar issues, how to, on the one hand, be not necessarily a collectivist society, but provide its people with the opportunities they need to realize their full individual self. And it's always a balance, because if you're only capitalistic, then, you know, who will take care of the people who cannot take of themselves? I mean, that's some of the issues that most states have to balance. Now, I want to ask you about the perception of Russia, because in my conversations with the Indians, they do have a sort of historical lens onto my country. They have these communist sympathies. They remember the Cold War friendship. But do you think the Indians, how contemporary are their perceptions of Russia at this point of time are?
Indians love Russians, and you can take my word for it. And I'm not even saying that I'm an exception to that rule. Across the board, if you talk about Russia in India, we love Russia, we love Russians, and we love anything that is Russian. So, in fact, you know, there was a sale of, we were contemplating, the Indian government was contemplating whether they should get the Su-57s or the F-35s. And if you read the common consensus, or if you ask me, I'd be like, no, the Su-57s, no, just go Russian. So it's the emotion that drives us, but it's also this long-lasting friendship that's so beautiful. And you know, I admire and I really thank PM Modi for really cementing that friendship, and our external affairs minister, Mr. Jaishankar, for really going out there and speaking his mind and telling the Western world not to school us and not to tell us what to do. Y'all are not the owners of this property. Y'all don't understand how things work. This is a multicultural and a multipolar world. Things have changed and you need to get out from that seat and to see the world differently.
Absolutely. And I think the Indian officials that you mentioned did it at the time when there was no apparent capitalist benefit for them or for their own country. And that's why I think Russian people too value this relationship with India, because as you said, it's through thick and thin. And sometimes the Indians put their interests on the line, not necessarily to defend the Russians, but to defend what they believe in and what they believe the world should be structured like, which benefits, I think, both India, Russia, and many other countries around the world. Now, putting geopolitics aside, I want to come back to the filmmaking. And I noticed that an increasing number of Indian filmmakers are choosing Russia as a backdrop for their movies. For example, your own film, Pathan, was partially set and I think filmed in Siberia. There are other Indian blockbusters like Jawan, Goat, greatest of all time, were set in major Russian cities. What do you think is driving this growing interest in Russia among the Indian creators?
One is, let me put it this way. See, we love locations. Indians love beautiful locations. Russia is a beautiful country. So that's one part of it. For me, I'm developing a film where Russia becomes an important character in the film. And I think that's very important when you make Russia a character. And it's a true story that I'm developing about our Indian students that were stuck in Sumy and how these bunch of people, these two guys, got our students out, and Russia had a lot to do with it in helping these students get out. And that's something I want to portray through this film. But the beauty of this film is that we want to find humor in the war. And I don't mean it in a condescending way. You know, when you find humor in some things, it makes life a little more beautiful. And that's what we want to do with this film.
Well, that's amazing. I'm definitely looking forward to it. And thank you very much for this fascinating conversation. It's been amazing talking to you.
Thank you, Oksana. The pleasure's all mine, and my love to the people of Russia. And I definitely want to meet my good man and friend, Mr. Putin.
Well, I hope he watches this interview. Yeah. My fingers are crossed for you. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
And thank you to our viewers for watching it. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart next week.